Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are with James Carson, New York City. You were talking about surprises. I want to carry this theme of improvisation a little farther, mm-hmm. and then you have a surprise. Time and again, we hear people coming out of the most unexpected places, including dog mushers, running sled dogs, talking about improvisation. Mm-hmm. I think most of us think of life in the way that we think of classical music, which I love, that you sit down and you play what is written, and then you get up and you go home. Mm-hmm. Improvisation isn't like that. Mm-hmm. I would contend, I think I'm hearing you say, life isn't like that, and we must begin to learn more and more how to improvise. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah, one of the... I realize when I look back over it now, the 30-plus years of my career as a professor, that one of the most consistent themes was to... try to get people to see that you've got to learn the rules, not to follow the rules, but to depart, learn, know where you can depart from them. One of the ways I've understood education is to learn what everyone else has already thought, so you won't repeat that. Not so you will, but so you won't repeat it. Mm-hmm. And so you will have, once you begin to be original, you will really be original and not mm-hmm. just repetitive. So, we have to keep two things together. One is the importance of improvisation, originality, creativity. The other is a really disciplined attempt to learn what's already been said and done.
Well, you have to earn the right to improvise.
That's right.
And the skill.
Well, of course.
And Picasso is a great example.
Skill... one of the things I've become more and more aware of, it's funny, even in my 50s and 60s, is that skill also involves a kind of daring or courage to do or say something that no one else has done before and take a risk for it. And that was another thing I found relatively painful in my experience as a professor, how difficult it was for students to take a risk.
I think it's difficult for all of us to take risks.
It's difficult. It is.
And it probably is worth doing.
Sure, it's worth doing.
It seems to me, as we talk to folks, that increasingly I'm hearing from virtually every part of the spectrum that taking risks is no longer optional. Mm-hmm. Wherever it is we are going will require it of us. Mm-hmm. Do you see that too?
Oh, yeah, right.
Going back to the finite and infinite games, that one, if you can do this fairly quickly.
Yeah.
You play the game. The game is very important. It's to me has been an extraordinarily useful metaphor. Part of the challenge, though, is that people cheat.
Right.
Yeah. What do you do when people cheat?
Yeah.
Well, see, what people are cheating is a form of deception. It's having someone think. It's leading someone to think you are doing one thing when you're doing another. The one of the great distinguishing characteristics of an infinite game is that everything is in the open. No one cheats. No one has to. There's no advantage in cheating. You don't get an edge up by cheating because you cheat to get ahead of someone, to win something you would otherwise lose. If you take the winning and losing out, there's no reason to cheat.
So what
there's
happens,
no way of cheating.
What happens if you're playing an infinite game with somebody who's playing a finite
game?
Well,
you know, I think the most painful part of this way of thinking for me is that a very, very good infinite player, very skilled, gifted, original, and so on, can still be done in by a finite player.
Well, and the fact is, you will lose the finite game.
You will, yes, right, you do. If you conceive of life as a finite game, you're a loser.
And if you conceive it as an infinite
game.
You conceive it as an infinite game,
yeah.
and you're playing with a finite player, within the context of that finite game, you will lose.
Right.
But the great human beings of all time are great losers.
Well, what we see...
They end up on crosses.
Yeah, what we see is that...
No.
No?
What we see is that they're not losers, but they were playing a different game
right.
than people thought they were.
Right.
And one of the ways I like to think of this is that if you think of your life as an infinite game, death is not the end of it because the game goes on beyond your death. So in a way, literally, you play into the next life. It may not be your life, but it's life.
Well,
it continues.
We are all children of the Big Bang. We're just rearranging molecules from one day to the next and one generation to the next.
Well, I'm going to take us to one of humanity's great losers, Jesus.
That's good. Yes.
Okay. Right. There's a segue for you.
Yeah.
I think people forget that Jesus was a Jew living in the back end of the Roman Empire, and he ended up a common criminal on a cross. And then a lot of stuff happened around it, and 2,000 years later, we have four Gospels.
Mm-hmm.
I got through that pretty fast, didn't I?
That's a short
one.
That's
a nice history of Christianity in one sentence, without even any subordinate clauses. So
I'm usually stuck in those subordinate clauses. The reason that I say it quite that way is that these are stories about Jesus, these four Gospels. And once upon a time, you tell me, out of the history and literature of religion, that there were lots more.
Yes.
So tell me short course about the lots more, and then tell me longer what you did about it.
Okay. The scholars now believe that there may have been as many as 200 Gospels written
That's
in the
a lot.
First.
You mean like Matthew,
right,
Mark,
in the first
Luke, and John?
Two Christian centuries. Pardon me. Yes, yeah, like Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Those four Gospels became the canonical, that is to say, they were declared part of the official Christian canon, the New Testament. In the 4th century only. In fact, even after the 4th century, they were sometimes challenged. That other Gospels were preferred. But so we now, 1,500 years later, or more than that, think that this is all that there might have been. In fact, scholars have known for a long time, there are many, many others, written both before and after the canonical Gospels. And in every, see, this, I think this is the most important thing. Every one of them has a different Jesus.
Mm.
So if we really take this literature seriously and look back through it at the figure of Jesus, we don't see a figure. We see a multitude of figures. So the question is, who is the figure? Who was Jesus?
In the historical sense?
Excuse me?
In the historical sense, in the religious sense, who was Jesus?
No, in the historical sense, originally, but that bleeds into the religious issue. I mean, if you have a Jesus who is a political rebel, as he is in some of the Gospels, that's a certain kind of Christianity. If you have a Jesus who is a profoundly mystical, that's another kind. If a healer, a teacher, a wisdom teacher, there are a lot of possibilities. Wandering philosopher.
All of this is very important, given the role that the Judeo-Christian tradition has played in the world for a long time. This isn't just talking religion. This is talking about how we see everything, either buying it or not buying it, it mm-hmm. absolutely has shaped a large part of the last 2,000 years of being human.
Right.
Right?
Right.
I mean, this
right.
isn't just, we aren't talking religion here, we're talking the human experience.
Yes, right, right. Uh-huh.
So then this guy Jim Carse comes along and he says,
yes?
There were 200 of them. Why not 201?
Well, it occurred to me that the writing of Gospels was a major Christian literary activity, maybe the major activity of the first, three centuries, say, something like that. And then it inexplicably stopped. No one knows exactly why, but the establishment of the canon had something to do with it, I'm sure. So I thought it would be interesting to revive the tradition of writing Gospels, and I sat down and have written a Gospel.
Oh, geez. We're going to come back in just a minute with some more of James Carse in New York. Bill Russell and I, Paula Gordon, are here. We're going to come back and talk about the fifth Gospel. Stay with us.